And informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
Voices are heard, ideas are shared, and friendships are formed. So why not join the information revolution at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
In your mind. Does the world seem inverted, backward, dissonant? Dare to think out loud. You see your rights, freedoms, your very way of life being attacked, systematically eroded. Dare to think out loud. You observe traitorous evil rewarded, stealing the future from your children and grandchildren. Dare to think out loud. You question all the jingoistic propaganda claimed to be history. Dare to think out loud. You have tuned in to the right show. Dare to think out loud. Here's an expert on original source true history, your host, the Rebel Madman, Michael Gaddy.
Wow. Well, thank you, Giuseppe, for that great introduction, and welcome to you folks out there who have tuned in today to Dare to Think Out Loud. Hell, most people dare to think. But anyway, we are here today on the 14th day of January in the year of 2022, and today we're going to look at a subject, my friend Cal Robbins and I are going to look at a subject that several people have been talking about lately, and is secession constitutional? Well, before we jump into that, let me check in out there in Western Arizona with my friend Cal Robbins. Cal, how you doing today, part?
I'm doing good today, Mike. Thanks for asking. And yourself, how you doing?
Well, fair to middling for a man of my advanced years. So we will not dwell on that, but move right forward into the actual theme of today's show, secession. And we are told, of course, the federal government said secession was a reason to kill about a million people. And Cal, I can't help but think, and we're going to go into several different aspects of this, but as I was out this morning doing my morning walk and putting the program into context in my head, I had this thought. What if we had, well, let me state my premise first. I believe that not only is secession constitutional, but I believe that secession is moral. Imagine that. Now, you might yes, sir, go ahead.
I would add to that that secession is also necessary.
Well, that would follow right along with my thought here. And I was wondering, what if we found ourselves one of these Marxist, feminist, social justice warriors who found herself in a abusive relationship. What if one of these wonderful do-gooders had married someone and then suddenly this person becomes tremendously abusive, steals all their money, forces them to do things that they do not want to do? What would this Femi Marxist have to say if she was told, sorry, you cannot divorce this person. You can't even leave them. You cannot physically leave this person. You must stay with this person regardless of what they do to you that you feel is immoral, illegal, or, my God, unconstitutional. Regardless of what they do, you have no choice. You have to stay. They steal all your money. They physically abuse you. They order you to do things you don't want to do. Even physically abuse you. But the law says you can't leave. Now we're looking at the moral ramifications. Cal, do you think we could get the Femi Marxist to agree with this?
I don't know if a Femi Marxist would agree with it. They kind of tend to do whatever the law says. Morally, the person should leave that abusive situation. It's liberty of association. You have the liberty to associate, and you also have the liberty to not associate. And as long as you're not violating anyone's rights, you're free to do what you want. That's what rightful liberty is. So to say that you can't would be a violation of that individual's liberty.
Well, what would a Femi Marxist say if you told her that she was required by law to stay in an abusive relationship?
Well, to them, law is everything. The state, the law is everything. So I guess they would stay within the abusive relationship. And
really?
Put up with the abuse. They would. I wouldn't. They would.
Really?
I can't.
You think a social justice warrior would put up with that, Cal?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know any social justice warriors, but most people would get divorced if they were in that relationship. But I also know a lot of people who are in abusive relationships who won't get out of the abusive relationship.
Oh, you mean like us?
Yeah. I was thinking on a political life. Yeah, exactly like us.
Like us.
By us, you mean the royal we or the royal us, meaning the American people.
We the people.
Well, which we the people? The American people or the we the people that signed the Constitution?
Well, Cal, this kind of chimes in with the program I did yesterday with Jim Ramp.
Yes.
And here is the point that I would make. Why would people tolerate from government things that they would never tolerate from a member of their family? Things they would never tolerate from a friend, a neighbor, their preacher, or even their banker?
Yep.
Why will people tolerate things from government and say you have to stay and be abused and do the things you don't want to do? Why would they say that? When they would not. Well, you know, I brought the thing up with Jim yesterday. Cal, you and I decide we're going into business together. So we write up a contract. And I say, okay, Cal, now during our business relationship, I can take any amount of the money that you have for any reason that I deem necessary and proper. And I can take it at any amount at any time for any purpose. Would you sign that agreement?
No, I would not.
How many people that you know would agree to such a contract?
Everybody I know that votes agrees to that contract.
Well, they agree to it, but do they know what they're doing?
Probably not. They're ignorant of the fact that they're consenting to that abuse. Yeah, and I'm the enemy. I'm not the one taking their money and abusing them, but if I point out to them that's what's happening, I'm the enemy. That's how socially conditioned and indoctrinated through the government schools these people are.
But these people will tell you, people who wouldn't tolerate this themselves, tell you that the southern states in 1860, 1861 should have tolerated that from the government. And they say that secession is not legal. You know, what is that, Texas v. White, that Supreme Court decision which said that secession is unconstitutional? Imagine that, when the case wasn't even about secession whatsoever. But, secession, leaving an abusive relationship is not, although it may be immoral to stay in a abusive relationship, it is lawful, and you must stay in an abusive relationship. Yeah. So how does that make sense, Cal?
It doesn't make sense. These are the contradictions that people don't, that people through their cognitive dissonance do not address. You know, I mean, A equals A. The truth knows no contradiction. If you find a contradiction, check your premises. That comes from John Galt from Atlas Shrugged. And people don't see the contradiction. They don't see that the Declaration of Independence was about secession. So now if you have a constitution says you can't secede, then the Constitution is the opposite of the Declaration of Independence.
Well, Cal, let's say, hypothetically, let's say that you have a daughter. Let's just for casual purposes and just for to draw an analogy, let's say that you have a daughter. And she goes out and she gets married and she marries a really terrible person. And on a regular basis, he steals all of her money. He beats the hell out of her whenever he wants to. He forces her to do things she does not want to do. But she comes running home to you and says, "Daddy." And she's got black and blue marks all over. She's been physically abused. And she says, "Daddy, I've got to do something. I am being mistreated. This SOB is going to kill me if I don't do something." Cal, would you tell your daughter, "Well, sorry, honey, but that's the law. You're going to have to stay there"?
No, that's not what I would tell her.
Well, isn't that what the people are saying when it comes to secession?
Yes.
That a state that feels that it's being abused does not have the right to leave a government that is abusing them?
That's what they're saying. Well, they're saying that they don't believe in the tenets of the Declaration of Independence when they say that. Well, that's a right that's been declared and has precedent set by the Declaration of Independence.
Well, Cal, what if three states stated in their ratification agreement, in other words, we're establishing a contract, and you say, "Okay, Mike, I want you to do this, that, or the other." And I say, "Okay, Cal, I will do that providing that I can do this." And you accept it. Does that establish a contract?
Yes, it does.
Well, let's look at the ratification agreement of the state of Virginia. In 1788, when they agreed to join the Union of States, here is what they said. "We, the delegates of the people of Virginia, duly elected, in pursuance of a recommendation from our General Assembly, and now met in convention, having fully and freely investigated and discussed the proceedings of the Federal Convention, and being prepared as well as the most mature deliberations hath enabled us to decide thereon, do, in the name and in behalf of the people of Virginia, declare and make known that the powers granted under the Constitution, being derived from the people of the United States, may be resumed by them whensoever the same shall be perverted to their injury or oppression. Now, is that not a contract for secession, Cal?
That would be Virginia saying, yeah, we're going to reserve the right to secede.
Well, and if the federal government accepted that upon admission to the Union, does that not establish a contract with both parties?
Yes. But they also said, you know, within the powers delegated to the federal government. And the power of the federal government to make any law that they think is necessary and proper to the welfare and the general welfare of the United States supersedes that.
Well,
just like it supersedes anything that's written down in the Bill of Rights. It supersedes any state constitution, any declaration in a ratification convention, and any declaration or Bill of Rights. Between Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, and Article 6, Clause 2, everything, all of that is negated. All of that is nugatory. Just as Richard Henry Lee spoke about it to Patrick Henry in his letter talking about the Bill of Rights. All of that is negated by this Constitution.
But
this is where we need to separate constitutional theory, what a Constitution is supposed to do, and point out that this Constitution doesn't rise to that constitutional theory.
But wait a minute, Cal.
Those two clauses alone negate any limitation on Congress.
But wait a minute.
Stated,
but wait a minute. Okay. Wait a minute. Once you have violated, as you said and succinctly stated, once you have accepted a contract, which they accepted from Virginia, Rhode Island, and New York, once they accepted that, once they violated that agreement with the new Constitution, did that not make the contract null and void?
You would think so, but you got to remember Virginia also agreed to the necessary and proper clause by acceding to the Constitution.
Point well made. But can you accede to something that will violate the contract which you previously signed?
Yeah, you can. And in an argument, I'm not trying to make an argument for the Federalists, but this was pointed out to the people by the Anti-Federalists that this is what would happen. And so you can't say that they were ignorant of it because the Anti-Federalists pointed it out. So instead of heeding the words of the Anti-Federalists, such as Patrick Henry, especially in the state of Virginia, instead of listening to him, they went ahead and acceded to the Constitution. And Virginia has suffered ever since.
But wait a minute, Cal. Let's look at Article 4, Clause 2.
Okay.
Can you pull that up and read it for me?
Okay, let me see if I can find it.
I'll give you a couple of minutes there. Pull up Article 4, Clause 2, and read that for me. And let's see, what did the Constitution, in fact, contradict itself?
Okay, let's see how easy this is to pull up.
Okay.
Even pulling up a clause in the Constitution has become difficult.
That's, isn't that amazing?
Oh, Article 4, Clause 2. Okay, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states.
Ooh.
A person.
Oh, wait a minute now. The Constitution says that we granted by acceptance Virginia, Rhode Island, and New York with their provisions, and therefore every provision that Virginia, New York, and Rhode Island have agreed to is now available for every state.
Yes.
It says that all states have the same privileges and immunities, right?
Well, theoretically, yes. They would all have that same privileges and immunity, and they would have the right to secede. Every state has that right.
Is there anything in the Constitution, Cal, that says a state cannot secede?
No, there is not. But again, this Constitution doesn't operate on expressly delegated powers. It operates on implied powers. It operates on whatever that Congress thinks is necessary and proper. And because it's been so expanded, we can say it's whatever the federal government thinks is necessary and proper. Not just the judicial, the executive, or the Congress, but any of the bureaucracies anymore, because all those powers have been delegated out because the Congress thought it was necessary and proper to do that. And so we're living under a government of implied powers. So any declaration is made nugatory by implied powers. That's all there is to it. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, yes. That's what I've come to in my understanding. In my studies and my understanding is this Constitution is a document of implied power. So there is no such thing as unconstitutional. I mean, everybody goes around and says, well, that government can't do this. It's unconstitutional. Well, if they think it's necessary and proper for the general welfare of the United States, then it's constitutional. But everybody focuses it on the Constitution. It's, well, this violates my rights. It's almost as if the Constitution means more than the individual's right to these people. Because that's their premise of their basis. The violation is of the Constitution. They're violating words on a piece of parchment. No, the government's violating my rights. It's violating my fellow man's rights. But people don't take that step, you know? And so when it does that, then people are stuck obeying the law. People are stuck in that abusive relationship because they look to words on parchment instead of looking within themselves and what their rights are. And that's the difference between now and those men who stood up at Lexington Green. There was no constitution then, was there? No written constitution. But they knew what their rights were. The rights lived within them, within their heart and soul. And that's where this needs to be. It needs to be off that piece of parchment called the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, because it's a document of implied powers. It's a status document of servitude is what it is. And put those rights back where they belong within each individual, to carry those rights internally within you. They're unalienable. They're a part of you. You cannot get rid of them. All you can do is secure them and exercise them properly.
So, Cal, you're telling me that because of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, and Article 6, Paragraph 2, anything the government does is constitutional.
Yeah, that's how they wrote it. That's what the Federalists did. This was the beauty of Gouverneur Morris and the style of – and the Committee of Style and Arrangement. This is legalese. They only had to put in three or four, key clauses and then fluff it up with a bunch of other stuff that looked good. And they have all the rights of any despot or any monarchy that chooses to be malevolent. I mean, the government can take these powers and not exercise them. I mean, the powers are delegated to them. And they're going to exercise as much as they think they can get away with. You're watching it right now with the COVID. Now there's pushback on the federal government, so now it's going to be up to the state governments again to push the COVID vaccine thing.
So now we're going to probably, stomp around on something that DW and I are going to do on Sunday evening at 6 p.m. on Addicted to Your Own Destruction. But Do you see some kind of sinister plot in yesterday's Supreme Court decision, Cal?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You want to elaborate on that for a second?
Well, part of it is the controlled opposition. I mean, now there's pushback, so they know there's pushback. So this, you know, the federal government through the Supreme Court is going to say, well, there's pushback. So let's put the blame on the state so that people are, you know, well, we can't blame the federal government. It's the states that are going to push this mandate. So the federal government is one way or another going to coerce the states into enforcing it. They also stated that it was HHS, Health and Human Services. Well, they have the authority. They've been delegated the authority through Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18 by the government to make such a mandate, but they don't have any enforcement mechanism. But now OSHA has an enforcement mechanism, but they don't have the authority. They haven't been delegated that authority yet through Congress. So now Congress could either delegate and create another enforcement branch for HHS. Great. We'll have another bunch of federal sheriffs. Or they can delegate that overreaching health authority to OSHA, or they can coerce the states to do their bidding to make the state subordinately useful as Madison intended, or they could do all three. And this is just a setup. This is just controlled opposition. This is just a setup for them, for the federal government to assume more powers. That's how I see it. To create more powers than they think are necessary and proper for the general welfare of the United States. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, you know, because I don't trust the government at all. I see them doing all three because they can. As long as the people let them, as long as the people comply, it will happen.
Wow.
There's only one way to stop that, this from going on, and it's going to be through force. I mean, secession, you can try secession, but the state, the federal government's going to try and force you not to. So we're right back into that again. It's like the Terminator. It knows it will not negotiate. There is no stopping it other than stopping it. But yeah, but as far as secession goes, no, it's necessary. It's proper. It's moral. It's what should be done. It's how, if people want to have some forms of government to govern over them, it needs to be done.
Wow.
Otherwise, the will of a minority will always control a majority.
Well, I think we got into that on Jim's show yesterday. Do we truly believe that we have a democracy where the majority rules, Cal? And I know that this government was never intended to be a democracy, because throughout the Constitutional Convention, for those who have taken time to read the actual proceedings of that convention, they will find that the Federalists said the reason they were creating a new constitution was to stifle democracy.
Yeah, to stifle the will of the people is what they were saying.
Oh.
To stifle the right. Not just the will, but to stifle the rights of the people.
Well, Cal, is there a reason that the people in this country believe that this Constitution is so strong, other than the fact that they have been taught from they were knee-high to a grasshopper that this thing was inspired by God?
When you try to discuss it with them on that level, no, it's just pure indoctrination. It's government propaganda, indoctrination.
Well, as I mentioned yesterday on Jim's show, I remember reading a historian by the name of Sheldon Richmond who made a statement. And in his statement, he said that the Constitution was a revolution in favor of government.
That's true.
Do you agree with that?
Completely. Yes, it was.
Well, we know, and you and I have discussed this, and we went into detail on the program I was on yesterday. But the Constitution of the United States negates and overrules the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, it does.
Well, try telling that to Joe Sixpack.
Most of Joe Sixpack confuse the two documents with each other anyway.
Wow.
I've seen people who claim to know the Constitution who start quoting the Declaration of Independence. You know, I mean,
wow.
The documents are opposite of each other. If you will take the indoctrination and the emotion out of it and actually sit down and look and read the two and analyze what the two are doing, you will see that the Constitution is antithetical to the premises and maxims laid out within the Declaration of Independence.
Really?
The Declaratory Charter of the Rights of Man, as Jefferson once called it.
Huh. So, gosh, Cal, I'm getting a little upset here. You trying to tell me that this Constitution is the means of which we have been made slaves to a government that we believe we have a say-so in?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying.
So you're saying that what we believe is our key to freedom is actually the chains of oppression and tyranny?
That's what most people believe. Their freedom comes from their chains of oppression and tyranny by supporting the Constitution. Because that's what it does. It lays chains upon the wrists and ankles of everyone.
Well, it's
designed to do that. So that the wealthy and well-born could have control over the means of resources, including the people. All wealth is generated through either the earth, the sea, or the people. And they control all of it. Well, they're puppets and they're controlled, but that's where it was a big start when they wrote the Constitution in garnering further control. Why? Because we could get into who was behind, you know, Alexander Hamilton and his push to have a Constitution and chase this thing, just follow the money.
Oh, and who was Alexander Hamilton's big supporter in all of this?
The Bank of England?
Yes, and then, of course, there had to be one George Washington and one James Madison. Gosh, Cal, if we're going to tell the people who are listening that James Madison, the father of the Constitution and the father of the Bill of Rights, and George Washington, the father of our country, if we're going to tell people that these two individuals conspired with Alexander Hamilton and others to create a new monarchy in which they would be in control, which would enslave the American people financially forever, we're going to have a problem with that, Cal.
It's American blasphemy to say it, but the source documents, the letters written between them prove it.
But why should I believe a source document when I can go on the internet and look at the 10th Amendment Center and Chris Ann Hall, who will tell me just exactly opposite of what you're saying, Cal?
You can believe what they're saying, which is a myth. I mean, all evidence and proof points to the myth. I mean, just look around you. Everything they state is false. If the Constitution limited to government, then why is there so much tyranny? If this is such a Christian nation, why is there so much evil? I mean, everything they say is contradicted by the reality, by the evidence out there. They claim that all of this, yet reality is exactly the opposite. And when you keep saying something that's exactly the opposite of reality, isn't that a myth? What they're spouting is mythologies about this Constitution. They're basing things constitutional theory, how theoretically a constitution is supposed to work. So we have this grand American experiment in constitutional theory. Well, the Federalists didn't set this constitution up to secure the rights of the people, which is the purpose of government. The Federalists set this government up so that they would have control over all means of wealth and resources. And because, you know, they had lawyers, you know, merchants involved with lawyers, involved with more of the wealthy and well-born, they were able to finagle it and to lie to the people and convince the people this was in their best interest. They put a couple of big names behind it, like Washington and Franklin, and la-di-da, here we are. We have this Constitution, which is enslaving everybody, and a lot of people cling on to their chains of slavery. They don't see – they have too much parchment worship to critically analyze the Constitution for what it really is.
So what you're trying to tell me here is that James Madison, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton sold this Constitution as a means for preventing the majority from dominating the minority. Yet exactly the opposite was created?
Well, yeah, you've got, what, 535 people controlling 330 millions of people?
Well, Cal, let's look at it.
Is this kind of like where who am I thinking of? Thomas Paine wrote that how can an island such as, you know, England govern a whole continent such as America? I mean, it's the same illogical thing. How can, you know, this little 10 square mile area with 535 people in it control the vastness of this whole American continent on 330 million individuals in it? How can it do that if it doesn't use coercion and oppression and tyranny?
Well, Cal,
how
yes.
can those people conform if it doesn't? Because it's too vast, too big of an area. There's too wide of a difference of opinions and views. And so naturally that should be split up to like-minded people could live with each other. If you want to be abused, go live over there in the abusive state. You know, I don't want to be that part. I'm going to leave. But give me a place to go. You know?
Well, let's stop and think about something. We have 526 people that we can vote for. Now, that would be the members of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the President. Now, they represent 526 people. Now, Cal, if we did the math and we said 526 elected people make all of the rules and all of the limits and all of the everything for 330 million people, that would mean that 526 people is what percentage, if we break it down by math, those 526 people are what percentage of the total population?
Somewhere around 0.00006%.
Well,
it's
actually 0.0000162%.
Okay. Let's see, it's okay. 1, 2, 4, 5, 6 zeros.
Yeah, well, 5 zeros, and then 162.
Wow, that's like millionths of a percent.
Okay, now, those people rule over every action of 330-plus million people. Everything we do is ruled by that slight percentage of people. And you know, we're going to get upset and say, well, we get to vote for them. Yeah, you do. But so what? That doesn't mean they're going to do what you tell them to do just because you vote for them. That doesn't mean anything. Just because you pay them with your tax money, nah, they're going to do whatever the hell they want to. A classic example of that, Cal, is 2009. 2009, when they came up with this bailout, the TARP program, the members of Congress admitted that their letters, emails, telegrams, everything they got was 99.4% against the bailout of these banks. So the Congress said, no, to hell with you people. We're going to bail out these banks anyway with your money.
Where does that tell you their loyalty is?
Well, where is the belief that your vote has any authority? You voted for these people and they do whatever the hell they want to, or whatever the hell they're told to do by the people with money, and to hell with you. They don't care. But then,
what they say. Well, no, voting is an act of consent. It means you accept the system and the outcomes of the system. So when you vote for someone, even though, you know, they're going to do what the bankers tell them to do, you're consenting to it. You said, okay, I agree with whatever laws you guys come up with. That's what voting is.
Well, and I agree with that. But here we've talked about these 526 people, but yesterday, a great example. Yesterday, we had 9 people sit down, and those 9 people can overrule those 526 people we vote for any damn time they want to. 9 Yes. people can overrule the 526 that you vote for. Now, who are those 9 people? Well, they are unelected, politically well-connected lawyers who are in office for life. In other words, we have 9 kings in America who can overrule any act of the people you vote for. So if you voted for people who would actually go do what you wanted them to do, the Constitution of 1787 and the Judicial Act of 1789 gives that government into the power of 9 people who can say, we don't care what these 526 people do. We can overturn anything they try to do. So in essence, we are not ruled by 0.0000162% of the people, but we are ruled by 0.0000003% who can overrule anything that is done by this government. Yet, we frickin' idiots believe that we have representation in government because we can vote.
Yeah.
Now,
says it by accident, by design.
Oh, yes, this was designed this way.
As Hamilton put it, that the Federalists had.
Well, Cal, have you read your lesson on Teach Me for today?
I don't know if I have or not. I don't think so.
Well, that's where we got into in our studies of the Constitutional Convention authorizing the auxiliary court system. In other words, the federal judges. This is where the argument at the Constitutional Convention about having federal judges, whereas several members at the Constitutional Convention wanted the states to have the final say-so, and the federal government and the U.S. Supreme Court to only be able to rule in disagreements between the states, not to be able to rule on every damn thing that happens, but to rule only on disagreements between the states, which would have left the judicial powers within the states. But yes, these wonderful Federalists contradicted that and defeated it at the Constitutional Convention, putting all of the power in the federal courts. And as we have seen, especially in Proposition 187 in California back years ago, regardless of how the people vote, one federal judge, one judge can overrule the will of the people at their discretion. Now tell me about your frickin' Constitution and all of the rights you have protected in it when one clown in a black gown can overrule everything the people say. Please make me understand that, Cal.
I can't. The federal government can overrule any individual's rights anytime it chooses to, per the Constitution. Is it moral? No, it's not. Does the government always do it? No, it doesn't always do it. But it has that authority to anytime it should so choose, delegated to it through the Constitution.
Well, an example was yesterday, and even though the Supreme Court ruled yesterday that they could overrule what the president had said, and of course everybody jumped up and down and goes, yay, 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 we can do it, we stop Biden from imposing these vaccine mandates, yay, Supreme Court. The thing you forget, people, is that these nine people can overrule anything they want to, including the things you want, not just the things you oppose. And every once in a while, these clowns in black gowns will throw you a bone like they did yesterday and say, okay, yeah, Biden can't do this, but the states can. The other thing about this decision, people, that you did not pay attention to is they said, because you were only looking through your narrow vision, but the Supreme Court yesterday said that the OSHA can tell health workers what they can do and what they can't do. So you have accepted in this decision the fact that the Supreme Court said OSHA can tell people what to do in a specific profession.
That would make a class of people.
Yeah, you have delineated a class of people which the federal government can control, which means they can control anybody they want to.
So much for all men are created equal.
Yes.
Oh, did we just contradict the Declaration of Independence again?
Oh, no. Cal, please tell me no.
Did they? Did they just take that all men are created equal or endowed by their creator?
With certain unalienable rights?
And now but that's not true now, according to the federal government.
No, but Cal, stop and think about something. The majority of people yesterday, especially those right-wing Christian conservatives, were jumping up and down cheering because of the Supreme Court's decision, not realizing that they are cheering a decision that this court can delineate certain classes of people for certain punishments. So what happens next week using this, and I'm stretching it, but next month, next year, this same Supreme Court says, well, using the precedent established on January the 13th, using that precedent, we're going to say that all of you people who don't agree with the President of the United States can be disarmed. You've already accepted the premise.
Are you guilty of sedition or insurrection?
Exactly.
Because you haven't, you're rebelling.
And then they.
So now you're a domestic terrorist.
And they could point back, Cal, and say, look, people, you thought this was a great thing back on January the 13th of 2022. You thought this was just absolutely great. Well, if it works one way, it works the other, which reminds me so much of that D.C. versus Heller decision. When the Second Amendment people in this country were just orgasmic, wetting themselves because Antonin Scalia had said that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right, not a collective right, and they were just going, yay, super, super, look what we've got. But they didn't read the entire decision. And in the entire decision, the great Antonin Scalia said that the rights of the people are subject to government control.
Yeah.
Reasonable restrictions is how he phrased it. Now, people, let me tell you something. Never in hell are the Supreme Court going to ask you what you think is reasonable.
Well, that's like they don't care. They reasonable. That's the same as saying necessary and proper.
Exactly. They can do any damn thing they want to if they call it reasonable, which, as Cal just said, goes back to necessary and proper. So, people, you have no frickin' rights under this Constitution. I don't care how many bills are in the Bill of Rights. Because all of the provisions, if you study this, if you've spent, you know, a modicum of time studying this, you know that these nine people can overrule anything they want. And you know what? You don't get to vote for them. And you know what? They're all lawyers. And you know what else? They're in office for life. You can't put them out of office. Now, tell me about your wonderful democracy, people. Tell me about it. Go ahead, Cal, before I get really upset here.
Well, I just, the people love their gilded chains. This is just the Supreme Court lightly pressing their chains upon them, you know, and they celebrate it. Not realizing that they're chains. These are chains of servitude. They're laying the foundation for what comes next. Yeah, you've pushed back, so, you know, we have plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We're going to go with plan C, and we're going to do this because you guys pushed back, so we're going to go with this. These people are 4, 5, 6 steps ahead of us. If anyone's playing 3D chess or 45D chess, it's the powers that be. And the people, you know, the right-wing conservatives, they're busy playing checkers.
Well, Cal, what if I told you that now, I mean, you got to put the pieces together. You got to be able to work the puzzle. And you're never going to be able to work the puzzle by watching Fox News or CNN, that's for sure, or PMSNBC. But here is something to think about. And that is, no matter what you think you have a right to do, you think you have the Second Amendment. But there are 2,000 federal gun control laws. Over 2,000. That's not even counting the regulations from the BATF that are accepted as law in federal court. And how many of you know that at one time, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, their agents were trained to perjure themselves in court? That's a proved fact. They were training their agents to perjure themselves in court to put you in prison for exercising your rights. Now, if the Second Amendment worked, how the hell can we have 2,000 gun control laws? Federal gun control laws.
You have a PHFE. If the Second Amendment worked, if the Constitution worked as it, the mythology says it does.
Cal, what are the first words of the First Amendment?
Congress shall pass no law.
Whoa. So should that phrase not precede every bill of right that we have?
You would think so, but it specifically doesn't. The Bill of Rights was written specifically just to appease the anti-federalists, to shut them up so that there wouldn't be another convention of states.
Well, Cal, when we come back on the flip side here, would you be willing to read that letter from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry in sure. September of 1789? And let's stop and think about something. Richard Henry Lee was a member of the Senate. He and William Grayson were the only two anti-federalists in the U.S. Senate. They were outnumbered 20-2 in the first U.S. Congress. But Richard Henry Lee wrote a letter, and so did William Grayson. We might get to Grayson's letter as well on the flip side. But Richard Henry Lee wrote a very, very, very arresting letter to Patrick Henry. And Cal, if you will read it, let's dissect that letter when we come back in the second hour. What are your thoughts?
Okay, I just got to pull it up. Got to find it on my computer.
You I just sent it to you.
I know, and I'm going.
I'm kidding you, buddy.
But my computer operates differently than my phone, and you know I'm so technically illiterate that I can find it on my phone, but I'm on Skype on the radio on my phone, so I got to find it on my computer.
Wait a minute. I thought I was the only individual in this group who, when he sat down at his laptop, there was a short between the keyboard and the seat.
No, man, it's when it comes to computer technology, I'm like banging two rocks together trying to make it spark.
Wow, we need us a Jamie Bell.
We need a Jamie Bell.
Yes, we absolutely need a techno weenie, don't we?
We do.
Well, Jamie, yeah, I hope Alabama Jamie.
Yep.
Alabama Jamie, I hope you don't mind us taking your name in vain.
Yeah.
He might even be listening if he's not working too hard.
He might be.
Well, we'll probably get a text message from him if he is here very shortly. But anyway, we've got about a minute till break, maybe less, and then we'll come back on the flip side. And Cal will begin with the letter from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry, I think, which should tell the people exactly what they did with our so-called Bill of Rights.
Exactly.
Well, Cal, tell us very quickly, how's the weather out there in western Arizona before we hit the music?
It's finally getting nice out here again. 52 for the overnight low, 75 for the high. Nice and sunny. Yeah, it's beautiful. This is why I live here.
Shut up.
This is why I live here. Plus, you know, I'm out in the rural area, and I don't have to be around the city, folks.
What a good choice.
Yeah. Every time I get back into the little town of Havasu, I'm reminded of how much I'm glad I don't live in a city.
Well, there's the music, folks. Welcome back to, in a few minutes, to Dare to Think Out Loud. We'll see you in a couple.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? You enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyphen thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. with your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to Dare to Think Out Loud here on the 14th day of January in the year of 2022. And, Cal, we told the folks that at the beginning of this hour that we would provide a letter from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry about the Bill of Rights. And let's lay a little groundwork again, not to be redundant, but Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson, the two senators from the state of Virginia, were the only two anti-federalists in the first U.S. Senate. They were outnumbered 20-2. Now hold that in your thoughts as you listen to the words of the letter, as Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson attempt to explain to Patrick Henry, who was their mentor back in Virginia. And let's remember, old Patrick Henry was give me liberty or give me death. We know what he was about. So let's listen in particular to the words of this letter that Richard Henry Lee wrote to Patrick Henry. So you ready, Cal?
Yeah, I think as we do this, Mike, we need to kind of parse through the letter to give this frame of reference to what Richard Henry Lee is actually talking
about. Exactly. So, I agree.
All right. So this is a letter from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry, dated September 14th, 1789. And it states, I have since waited to see the issue of the proposed amendments to the Constitution that I might give you a most exact account of that business. As they came from the House of Representatives, they were very far short of our wishes of our convention. But as they have returned by the Senate, they are certainly much weakened. So what he's saying there is, when he says they are very much short of their what the wishes of their convention, in the Virginia Ratification Convention, just as you mentioned how they put that clause in there where they can secede, they also proposed 40 amendments. 20 of those amendments are what you would call Bill of Rights amendments or Declaration of Rights amendments, and 20 more amendments that structurally altered the way this government would function, that would have put the Constitution more in line with what the constitutional theory of a Constitution should be. So Virginia wanted to fix the Constitution so that it acted more like what a real Constitution would do other than this one of implied powers. So just keep that in the back of your mind so that what Virginia's wishes are not being represented is what Richard Henry Lee is saying here. All right. He goes on. You may be assured that nothing on my part was left undone to prevent this. And every possible effort was used to give success to all the amendments proposed by our country meaning Virginia. We might as well have attempted to move Mount Atlas upon our shoulders. In fact, the idea of subsequent amendments was delusional altogether. In other words, this is just a delusion. This is a grand delusion, folks. This is a myth. And so intended by the greater part of those who arrogated themselves the name of the Federalists. In other words, he's telling you the Federalists are selling you a myth. I am grieved to see that too many look like the rights of the people as misers examine security to find a flaw in it. The great points of free election, jury and tribunal cases much loosened. The unlimited right of taxation and standing armies in peace remained where they were. Some valuable rights are indeed declared, but the powers that remain are very sufficient to render them nugatory at pleasure. The most essential danger from the present system arises, in my opinion, from a tendency to consolidated government instead of a union of confederated states. The history of the world and reason concurs in proving that so extensive a territory as the United States comprehended never was or can be governed in freedom under the former idea. Under the latter, it is abundantly more practicable because extended representation, knowledge of character, and confidence in conscience are wanting to sway the opinion of rulers, without which fear the offspring of tyranny can alone answer. Hence, standing armies and despotism follows. I take this reasoning to be unrefutable, and therefore it becomes the friends of liberty to guard with perfect vigilance every right that belongs to the states and to protest against every invasion of them, taking care to always procure as many protesting states as possible. This kind of vigilance will create caution and probably establish such a mode of conduct as will create a system of precedence that will prevent a consolidating effect from taking place by slow but sure degree. Well, I guess he was wrong on that. And also not to cease in renewing their efforts for amending the federal constitution as to prevent a consolidation by securing the due authority of the states. See, the state, he's saying that the state's authority is not secured anymore under this constitution. At present, perhaps a sufficient number of legislature cannot be got to agree in demanding a convention. But I shall be much mistaken if a great sufficiency not ere long concur in that measure. Well, he was mistaken. The preamble to the amendment is really curious. A careless reader would be apt to suppose that the amendments desired by the states had been graciously granted. But when the thing done is compared with that desired, nothing can be more unlike. By comparing the Senate amendments with those from below, by carefully attending to the matter, the former will appear well calculated to enfeeble and produce ambiguity. For instance, the rights reserved to the states of the people. The people here is evidently designed for the people of the United States, not of the individual states. The former is the constitutional idea of the people, we the people, and etc. It was affirmed the rights reserved by the states, Bill of Rights, did not belong to the states. I observed that then they belong to the people of the states, but that this mode of expression was evidently calculated to give the residuum to the people of the United States, which was the constitutional language, and to deny it to the people of the individual states. At least they left the room for cavil and false construction, which has happened. They would not insert after the people thereof, although it was moved. In other words, he proposed that they said reserved to the people of thereof instead of the states respectively. So Richard Henry Lee is saying that the Bill of Rights is basically a bill of goods and will amount to nothing, that the powers that reside still within the Constitution are enough to make anybody's rights, state constitution, bills of rights in state constitutions, and even these Bill of Rights nugatory at their discretion. If the federal government should so choose so, and it will eventually, it will and has. So he's basically explaining that this constitution is a constitution of implied powers. Am I accurate in that assessment in reading that, Mike? I think I lost Mike. Mike, are you there?
My bad. First day with my new brain. What you're telling me here is Richard Henry Lee writes to Patrick Henry and tells him that this Bill of Rights thing is a farce.
Yes.
Well, you know, why doesn't these people who go out on the trail and sell lies to the American public about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, why don't they ever read this letter, Cal?
Because that would go against the narrative and their way of making money off the people by telling them the comfortable.
Cal, are you trying to tell me that lies sell better than the truth?
Yes.
Oh, okay. As long as the lie makes you comfortable, right?
As long as the lie makes them comfortable, people will pay for it. Yes. They will accept it because it fits their idea of reality. Even though they complain about the tyranny and their lack of rights, they still continue to support the very entity that is causing that.
Hmm.
They buy blue line flags to show their support for those who enforce the tyranny. I mean, they don't get the contradiction in terms that they're living under.
Well,
they're living in mythology.
I saw where one of those constitutional attorneys stated on her website is that the Constitution did not grant unlimited taxing powers to the federal government. Well, Richard Henry Lee, who was actually at the senator in the first constitutional in the first Congress, actually says different. Now, who should we believe, a constitutional attorney or someone who was actually there, Cal?
Well, not only did the anti-federalists said it, many of the federalists agreed to it. James Wilson, in his letter in the courtyard, he admitted, yeah, there's unlimited taxation, but the states already have that power, so don't worry about it. Hamilton said it, I believe, in Federalist 10. He said that power is necessary. Just, you know, because we can't foresee all the exigencies to come in the future, the Congress must have this power. So the Federalists even admit that that power exists. Yeah, even though the Federalists who crafted the Constitution say that, yes, there is direct taxation and unlimited taxation, they still deny that that's the way it is. And it's right there, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1.
Well, for clarification, Federalist 10 was written by James Madison.
Maybe it was Federalist 13. One of them, there's one where Hamilton talks about this is necessary, especially because we don't know if we need to tax the people like this, you know, for standing army or whatever, because we don't know what exigencies will come up.
Right.
So the Federalists admitted to it. Every state that proposed amendments to the Constitution, and there were a bunch, that was every state that proposed them, that was one of their proposals, was to get rid of that direct taxation. Because direct taxation gave the government jurisdiction over the people directly. Under the Articles
of Convention.
As individuals, yes. Under the Articles of Confederation, the federal government or the Confederated Congress had no authority to say anything, had any authority over the people directly, individually. But the Constitution, through Article 1, Section 8, Clause 1, through direct taxation, gave the government that authority, gave the government the power to destroy, gave the government sovereignty over the individual. Because if I can take money from you for whatever reason, at any time, for whatever purpose I deem necessary and proper, am I not your master and you're my slave?
Always.
Am I not the sovereign? You're the pleb?
You're the sir. Yeah. All right, Cal, let me ask you a question now. That letter you just read from Richard Henry Lee to Patrick Henry, what was the date on that letter?
September 17th, I believe. Let me scroll back up here. September 14th, 1789. Okay. So the members are still working their way out of the Congress.
All right. So 2 weeks later, 2 weeks after that letter, Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson, the two senators from the state of Virginia, the only two anti-federalists there, they sent a letter to the Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates. They're reporting back to their state what happened at the when Congress was in session. Now, we have to tell people that the first session of Congress, the Senate met in secret. There is no recordings anywhere of what they did, and the only place you will know what they did is from these letters like you read and like I'm about to read. But Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson to the Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates, September the 28th, 1789. Now, we will parse this like Cal parsed the others. And it says, and I quote, "We have now the honor of enclosing the propositions of amendments to the Constitution of the United States that have been finally agreed upon by all of Congress. We can assure you, sir, that nothing on our part has been omitted to procure the success of those amendments proposed by the convention," he's talking about the Convention of Virginia, "and approved by the legislature of our country, which as our constituent," in other words, they're saying we are here to do what the people want us to do. And it says, "We shall always deem it our duty with respect and reverence to obey. The journal of the Senate herewith transmitted will at once show how exact and how unfortunate we have been in this business. It is impossible for us not to see the necessary tendency to consolidate an empire in the natural operation of this Constitution, if no further amended than what we now possess. And it is equally impossible for us not to be apprehensive for civil liberty when we know no instance in the records of history that show a people ruled in freedom when subject to an undivided government and inhabiting a territory so extensive as that of the United States." Now, remember, people, it was only 13 states back then. "And when, as it seems to us, the nature of man and things join to prevent it." Ooh. "The impracticability in such case of carrying representation sufficiently near to the people for procuring their confidence and consequent obedience compels a resort to fear resulting from great force and an excessive power placed in government. Confederated republics, when the federal hand is not possessed of absorbing power, may permit the existence of freedom, while it also preserves a union, strength, and safety. Such amendments, therefore, as may secure against the annihilation of the state governments, we devoutly wish to see adopted. If a preserving application to Congress from the states that have desired such amendments should fail of its object, we are disposed to think, reasoning from causes to effects, that unless a dangerous apathy should invade the public mind, It will not be many years before a constitutional number of legislatures will be found to demand a convention for the purpose of reinstituting new amendments. Well, they were wrong about that, because there was a dangerous apathy that has invaded the public mind, and it's still there. So that is the extent of that letter. Your thoughts, Cal?
Well, that's, you know, they're just predicting everything that's going to happen. Was it Richard Henry Lee or William Grayson? There was a letter wrote where he said, you know, through these amendments and through all of this, Virginia would have been best off not to have acceded to the Union in the first place. But there was a letter from one of them. I remember reading that somewhere. But they were saying that, you know, hey, this is so bad that, you know, Virginia probably shouldn't have gotten into this agreement. And so now he's even showing, well, we shouldn't have gotten into this agreement. Is there a way to get out of this agreement? You know, I mean, is it slowly starting to sink in, even on, you know, people like Richard Henry Lee and William Grayson, that we kind of made a mistake here? You know, we've kind of surrendered the sovereignty of the state. We're going to fight like hell to try and keep it. But, you know, through the dangerous apathy of, you know, dangerousness of the apathy of the people, that spirit is gone. I mean, they were calling Virginia their country back then, which, you know, once they acceded to the Constitution and it got this, everything got consolidated, Virginia is no longer its own sovereign country. It is a vassal of the United States enterprise.
Well, Grayson,
that's what people need to understand, was the state surrendered their sovereignty when they acceded to the Constitution.
Well,
Clause 2 says.
Well, old William Grayson did write a letter to Patrick Henry 5 days after that letter to the Speaker of the Virginia Legislature. Now, let's see if this is the letter you were referencing, Cal. And so here is the quote, again, William Grayson to Patrick Henry at the end of September in 1789. And he says, and I quote, "With respect to amendments, matters have turned out exactly as I apprehended from the extraordinary doctrine of playing the after game." Adding amendments after the Constitution was written is what he's referring to. "The lower house sent up amendments which held out some safeguards to personal liberty in a great many instances, but this disgusted the Senate." Oh, so a Senate with a 20-2 majority of Federalists was disgusted that there were amendments to safeguard the personal liberty of the people. Imagine that.
Well, many of those Federalist senators were also at the convention.
Oh, yes. They created a government which they would run.
Yes. I just wanted to point that out. Yeah, these people who are disgusted with, you know, bills of rights for the people are the same people that crafted this Constitution.
Well, let's continue with Mr. Grayson. And you're exactly right, Cal. Very good point. Well made. But then Grayson continues to Patrick Henry and he says, "And though we made every exertion to save those amendments from our state, they are so mutilated and gutted that in fact they are good for nothing. And I believe, as many others do, that they will do more harm than benefit." Oh, the amendments that the constitutional attorney and the wall builder and the 10th Amendment Center and all of these people, all of these things that they're saying is our savior, the people who were actually there said they will do more harm than benefit. But then Grayson continues, and that there, it's proved to be exactly as they stated. But Grayson continues and he says, "The Virginia amendments were all brought into view by he and Richard Henry Lee, but they were regularly rejected by the majority. Perhaps They may think differently on the subject the next session, as Rhode Island has refused for the present acceding to this Constitution. Well, you know, we could get into a story about how Rhode Island was forced into the Union by threats and coercion, but we'll save that for another show. But what do you think, Cal, on that letter from William Grayson to Patrick Henry?
He's just explaining exactly what happened. And once you hear this and understand what they're saying, it makes sense on why this government is acting the way it does now. Everybody says it's unconstitutional. No, it's acting within the powers delegated to it, because it gets to decide what those powers are. There are not expressly delegated powers in this Constitution. That is a myth.
Well, Cal, now what I would like to do is to jump back 3 months. Let's go backwards. 3 months earlier in June, when the subject of the amendments was first considered by this Congress, here we will find another letter from William Grayson to Patrick Henry on June the 12th. And he says in that, and I quote, "I am exceedingly sorry. It is out of my power to hold out to you, sir, any flattering expectations on the score of amendments. It appears to me that both houses are almost wholly composed and controlled by the Federalists. Those who call themselves antis are so extremely lukewarm as scarcely to deserve the name. Some gentlemen here from motives of policy have it in contemplation to effect amendments which shall affect personal liberty alone, leaving the great points of the judiciary and direct taxation to stand as they are. Their object is, in my opinion, unquestionably to break the spirit of the party by divisions. After this, I presume many of the most sanguine expect to go on coolly in sapping the independence of all of the state legislatures. In this system, however, of divide and impera, or divide and conquer, they are opposed by a very heavy column from the little states, who, being in possession of rights they had no pretensions to in justice, are afraid of touching subject which may bring into investigation and controversy their fortunate situation. Last Monday, a string of amendments were presented to the lower house. These altogether respected personal liberty. And I would now enclose you a copy, did I not know that Parker had done it already. Even these amendments were opposed by Georgia, New Hampshire, and Connecticut. They were, however, committed to a committee of the whole on the state of the nation, and it is thought will not be taken up again for a while. I understand that the mover was so embarrassed in the course of the business that he was once or twice on the point of withdrawing the motion, and it was thought by some of the committee was more owing to personal respect than a love of the subject introduced." Oh, sounds like somebody was intimidated in the House of Representatives. Anyway, in the Senate.
He's talking about Madison.
Yeah.
He's talking about Madison, didn't he? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Senate, I think that prospects are even less favorable, though no direct proposition has yet been brought forward. I have suggested to my colleague, which was Richard Henry Lee, the propriety of bringing forward all of the amendments of our state before this Senate at this time, but he thinks it would be best to wait until they come up from the House of Representatives, unquote. So there's another letter, Cal. We're looking at source documents here, 230-some years old, that totally contradict what a bunch of people are out there on the stump making money telling people the direct opposite. So who should we believe, Cal? You got your mute button on there, buddy?
Yeah, first day with my new brain, too.
Okay.
The people out there spreading the mythology, I mean, if you listen to these source documents, what they're saying fits the reality of the world we live in today. And what these scholars, the Chris Sand Halls and 10th Amendment Centers of the world, they're telling you a myth. I mean, what they tell you doesn't match the reality, but these source documents do. So not only are they written by the people who were physically actually there in their opinions, it also matches exactly what's going on today. When you listen to what they say, yeah, this is why this is happening, because they said this would happen. But yet people still want to cling to the mythology. They want to cling to that constitutional theory. I understand that, but that's not reality, folks. That's not what this Constitution does. And until you get that through your head, nothing's going to change. The change has to happen in your hearts and mind. And part of that mind is understanding that this document, this parchment that you are worshiping, is not what the Federalists sold you that it was. It's not an instrument of liberty. It's not an instrument of freedom. It's an instrument, it's a status instrument of control and subjugation.
Well, Cal, let's jump over to the other side here, because the other side proves our point just as well. Let's jump over to a letter from Hamilton to Rufus King on the anti-federalist and their proposed Bill of Rights. Now, listen to this. It's short, but here's the opposition. Here's the Federalist. Here's what Hamilton said, and I quote, "It is because the amendments subsequently made, meeting scarcely any of the important objections which were urged by the anti-federalist, have left the structure of the government and the mass and distribution of its powers exactly as they were. And these amendments are too insignificant to be with any sensible man a reason for being reconciled to the system if he thought that system was originally bad," unquote. Now, there's the other side saying they have negated these amendments to nothing. So both sides agree that these amendments mean nothing.
He's also saying that if you think that it has, you're not being sensible.
Exactly.
Hamilton is calling everybody who clings to this an idiot. Basically, he's saying these people are dupes. They're idiots. We pulled this over on them. But yet that myth continues and the people cling to it. And Hamilton is laughing at you, calling you an idiot for believing it. Am I wrong in that? I mean, that's how I see it.
Well, Cal, let's think of something. Now, when Madison had promised the people at the convention, the Virginia Ratification Convention, he had promised them a Bill of Rights. Because I believe if he had not promised the people at the convention, Virginia never would have ratified the Constitution. It was pretty damn close the way it was. And Patrick Henry did one heck of a job trying to get Virginia to not ratify the Constitution. And his reasoning is unassailable if you go back and look at it. So he tried, but Madison's running around at the time Patrick Henry is speaking on multiple occasions, promising all of the delegates, if you will just ratify, I will get you a Bill of Rights. I promise I will get you a Bill of Rights. Well, Madison then gets elected, despite all of Patrick Henry's efforts to keep him out of the first Congress. And Patrick Henry kept him out of the Senate. But Madison then ran against another future president, James Monroe, and won the district. So Madison, being the author of the Virginia Plan, when he gets to Congress, he is pretty well accepted as the leader of the House of Representatives. But Madison gets assailed. He brings up a Bill of Rights, and Madison knows that if he doesn't do this, his political career is over, because he promised the people of Virginia, both during the election against James Monroe and at the ratification convention, he promised the people of Virginia a Bill of Rights. Madison knows that if he doesn't get this Bill of Rights through, he's toast. His political career is over. So, but he gets to the first House of Representatives and he starts talking about a Bill of Rights, and he immediately comes under attack by the Federalists. Especially, you know, Noah Webster comes after him, and a guy named Richard Peters comes after him. And I mean, they just absolutely tell him that he's worthless for bringing up this Bill of Rights, that the government does not need to be hampered by the will of the people. And they tell him this in many respects. Well, Richard Peters writes him a letter about bringing this up and just really chastises Madison. Well, if you want to know Madison's real Madison, here is again an original source document, a letter from James Madison to Richard Peters on the 19th of August, 1789. And he says, and I quote, "Dear sir, I have been much delighted with the extract from your collection of fables and should have told you so sooner were I less encumbered with a number of involuntary correspondences which stand in the way of those which my inclination would cherish. May I hope that the wise cooks and foolish guests is but a sample of the treat you meditate for your friends out of the Ausente and Cagne Ballades. It will be criminally selfish to keep so delicious and precious a donation of the masses wholly for your own entertainment. The papers enclosed will show that the nauseous project of amendments," there's Madison, people, "nauseous project of amendments has not yet been either dismissed or dispatched. We are so deep in them now that, right or wrong, something must be done. I say this not by way of an apology for my actions, but to be sincere that I think no analogy is requisite. Because a constitutional provision in favor of essential rights is a thing not improper in itself and was always viewed in that light by myself," which is a lie. We can prove that with other letters. "It may be less necessary in a republic than a monarchy and in a federal government than the former. But it is in some degree national in every government, since in every government power may oppress, and declarations on paper, though not an effectual restraint," wow, "are not without some influence. In many states, the Constitution was adopted under a tacit compact in favor of some subsequent provisions on this head. In Virginia, it would have been certainly rejected had no assurances been given by its advocates that such provisions would be pursued." There he just said it wouldn't have been ratified if he hadn't promised a Bill of Rights. "As an honest man," oh my God, "I feel myself bound by this consideration. If the candidates in Virginia for the House of Representatives had not taken this conciliatory ground at their election, that state would have been represented almost wholly by anti-Federalists, the disaffected characters, instead of by the Federalists now in Congress. If amendments had not been proposed from the federal side of the House, the proposition would have come within 3 days from the anti-Federalists. It is certainly best that it should appear to be the free gift of the friends of the Constitution rather than to be extorted by the address and weight of the Constitution's enemies. It will kill the opposition everywhere, and by putting an end to the disaffection to the government itself, enable this administration to venture on measures not otherwise safe." What the hell does he mean by that? to venture on measures not otherwise safe. If we promise these people stuff, but we really don't give it to them, then we can do other things that we couldn't have gotten by with, is my interpretation of that. But then he goes on, he says, those who hate the government will always join the party disaffected to measures of the administration, and such a party will be created by every important measure. If no amendments be proposed, the language of the anti-federalists to the people will be, hey, we advise you not to adopt this Constitution without previous amendments. You listen to those who told you that subsequent securities for your rights would be most easily obtained. We urged you to insist on a convention as the only effectual mode of obtaining these amendments, but you yielded to the assurances of those who told you that a convention was unnecessary, that Congress would be the proper channel for getting what was wanted, etc., etc. Here are fine texts for popular declaimers who wish to revive the anti-federalist cause, and at the fall session of the legislatures, to blow the trumpet for a second convention. In Virginia, a majority of the legislature last elected is bitterly opposed to our government and will be joined, if no amendments are proposed, by a great number of the other side who will complain about being deceived by us. Some amendments are necessary to bring North Carolina and Rhode Island into the government. I am so informed by the best authorities in the state of North Carolina. I set out with an apology for not writing sooner. I must conclude with one for writing so much, and still more for writing so scurvily. Yours truly, James Madison, Jr. Your thoughts, Cal?
Well, first off, Madison is explaining that the best way to control the opposition is to lead the opposition, which is why Federalists need to jump out in front of this so that the anti-Federalists don't dictate how this is going to go down. Because, well, prior to this, Virginia and New York had already formally sent from their legislatures letters calling for a new state convention to amend this constitution. And by amend it, we're talking like rewrite a whole new constitution, which was the greatest fear of the Federalists. And this is what Madison is trying to explain to his fellow Federalists. He's saying, if we don't do this, if we don't take control of this, there's going to be an opposition to us that we can't control, and we might lose everything we've done. So let's put this together, try to divide the anti-federalists up and appease them a bit. And, you know, and apparently it worked, because the people are still appeased by it today. The states have been lulled into complacency. I mean, it's important to note, I mean, Madison was from Virginia. He had those 40 amendments proposed from Virginia, yet he specifically rewrote and only introduced, what was it, 15 amendments that went to the Committee of 11?
16.
That's all that the Committee of 11 looked for. I've gone back through reading the House annals on that, and that was all that was there, was those 15. That's why Richard Henry Lee saying, you know, and Grayson were talking about, should we introduce the 40 from Virginia? When should we introduce this? In other words, so all 40 from Virginia didn't go, and there were over 200 total amendments proposed by the various states. But the only thing that got looked at were the 16 that Madison brought up, that he specifically crafted in such a way that it wouldn't change the structure and the powers delegated to the federal government through the Constitution. That was their fear. That's what the Federalists feared. They'd done all this work to fool the people, to get them to go along with this scheme, to embrace their own tyranny. And they didn't want to lose that. And so Madison came up with this Bill of Rights. It got weakened even more in the Senate, got further weakened. So even what Madison first proposed got weakened down and watered down. to what there is today, yet people cling to this Bill of Rights, which is just a bill of goods, which is just a tub to the well, as some kind of saving grace on their liberty, which is just foolish. Because the Second Amendment alone, you know, shall not be infringed. Well, I'm sorry, none of my rights should be infringed. Why do we need to write this down? Why does it have to be in writing? Why can't it just be my rights cannot be infringed? Nobody's rights are supposed to be infringed. The purpose of government is to protect rights. Yet this government is the biggest infringer upon the people's rights. Is that not the reality we live in? And does that reality match the mythology, the story that we're told about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the founding of this country and these framers, these Federalists who wrote this document? Does any of that narrative fit in the reality that we are existing in? Or does it match the reality that the anti-Federalists said would happen?
That's a great point, Cal. You know, and I'm thinking about if we want to compare, you know, to really get into the lies that the Federalists told in the Federalist Papers, you know, we just read that letter from Madison to Richard Peters. And so, you know, amazingly, in 45, Madison would say the following: the state governments will have the advantage of the federal government, whether we compare them in respect to the immediate dependence of one on the other or to the weight of personal influence which each side will possess. The powers respectively vested in the states, to the predilection and probable support of the people, to the disposition and faculty of resisting and frustrating the measures of each other. Now, this is just, you know, we go back, and especially with what we're going to see coming now with the states leading the tyranny and oppression on these mandated vaccinations. Let's also look at 45, where Madison said, the state governments may be regarded as constituent and essential parts of the federal government. Oh, really? They're essential parts of the federal government?
AKA vassals of the federal government. As intended.
Okay, here's a brilliant lie for you. The number of individuals employed under the Constitution of the United States for the federal government will be much smaller than the number employed under the particular states.
Yeah. Okay.
That is just, you know, if you counted all the states, I'm not sure you would even be close then. But, you know, here
but
is
they're
the
all...
bit...
Federal government.
Go ahead, Cal.
Still, no, there. But even though you have, you know, your state government and your state bureaucracy and state enforcement, they're still all vassals of the federal government. The federal government still has supremacy, meaning that even the states must go along with the federal government. If the federal government decides to put its foot down, it can and will. And has.
Well, all we got to do is look at those nine clowns in back of the black gowns.
Yeah, well, look at 1861.
Yeah. But here, stop. Is there ever a bigger lie ever told by a Federalist? Ever a bigger lie than this one? And I quote, the powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and well defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former will be exercised, or in other words, the power to the federal government will be exercised principally on external objects as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. With which last the power of taxation will be for the most part be connected. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all other objects, which in the ordinary course of affairs concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people. and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the states. Is there ever a bigger lie in the history of this country than that paragraph, Cal?
No, that's one of the biggest lies. That's from Madison, correct?
Yes, Federalist 45.
Federalist 45. Well, that contradicts that. Okay, that's like a campaign speech. That's a politician talking the talk. Well, how about when Madison was walking the walk, when he explained that there cannot be expressly delegated powers?
How many times, Cal?
That's Madison walking the walk. That's Madison doing what the government does, as opposed to saying what the government's gonna do. This is what the government really does. And he says exactly the opposite on August 18th, 1789, on the House floor.
Well, Cal, how many times have we heard Chris Ann Hall, David Barton, and the 10th Amendment Center quote that very paragraph?
Well, that's another one of these narratives that are out there. They say, well, the Constitution needs to be seen in the way that it was ratified. So what way did Delaware look at it when they ratified it? How many of the Anti-Federalist papers were out by the time Delaware convened and 4 days later acceded to the Constitution?
Cal, Delaware, you can look at the records of the Delaware Ratification Convention. They didn't even read the Constitution at the convention. They wanted to be the first state. It's on their license plate today. They wanted to be the first state to ratify it, so they didn't even discuss it.
Oh, well, that's one of the narratives. I'm just trying to dispel some of these myths or narratives that are out there. Well, the Constitution has to be looked at the way the states looked at it when they ratified it. Well, Virginia looked at it like there's something wrong here and proposed 40 amendments to it. They looked at it and said, if we don't like it, we want to be able to get out of it. Yet in 1861, when they tried, they weren't able to. Were they?
Well,
we're dealing with all these myths out there. The reality just screams that's not the truth. But the people refuse to see it, and I don't get that. They love that comfortable lie.
They would rather believe a lie.
They defend that lie to their own detriment. They're addicted to their own destruction, as your other show says. It's just, it's crazy. It's mind boggling. And it's not going to get better until the people see it for what it is. It can't. Things can't get better if you keep clinging to the source of tyranny. If you keep clinging to that abusive husband, you're going to continue to get beat.
Well, Cal, let me read something for you here, and I've posted this on Facebook. I'm going to change the wording a little bit. But being as we are examiners of the Constitution and the history of the founding era and the history of the so-called founding fathers, we have spent endless hours for years and years gathering as much information as possible from as many resources as possible, and critically thinking and examining about that information and what it means. Then, yet, we have people who do nothing but watch TV tell us we're crazy and out of our minds. So, I've asked people this question. People get very upset because when someone starts a discussion with me on the Constitution, I start asking them questions. And they get real upset, and then they will say, well, what damn difference does that make? When you ask them, number one, what can you tell me about Luther Martin? Well, you mean Martin Luther? No. What can you tell me about Luther Martin? Well, what's that got to do with anything? Well, what can you tell me about John Francis Mercer? Well, who's that? What? What's that got to do with anything? Well, what can you tell me about Robert Yates and John Lansing Jr.? Well, who the hell is that? And why does that matter? Ignorance reigns supreme in this country. If you don't know who those people were, keep your damn mouth shut about the Constitution because you don't know enough to talk about it. Thoughts, Cal?
No, the only thing they know are the myths that they've been taught. Then resupported by the talking heads on radio and TV. And the 10th Amendment centers of the world, the Chris Ann Halls of the world. They love that comfortable life, but it doesn't fit reality. And I don't know how much reality people got to get slapped upside the head with until they realize that something ain't right here. And then they try to figure out what ain't right. And you show them the source documents. You tell them, well, these guys back here said it would turn out like this. They predicted this future. You're living in this future they predicted. They were anti-federalists. They opposed the Constitution. So shouldn't you take an honest, inquisitive, intellectual look at what they were saying about the Constitution and what adopting it and going by it would do to you and your liberty? I'm told it's a Judeo-Christian country. Well, one of the most pious Christian people known back then by his contemporaries then and by people now was Patrick Henry. And he was probably one of the most ardent people against the Constitution.
Well, Cal, as much as I hate to cut us short here, we're about to run out of time. There's a couple of things I want to get across. I sure appreciate you being with me today, buddy. Hopefully we have presented our case. Tomorrow I will be on with DW. We will be on with Scorpio and Giuseppe on, Operation Scorpio starting at, I believe 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. And then on Sunday, I will be on the program called Addicted to Your Own Destruction, as previously mentioned by Cal, and that will be, we will be discussing the 1860 census and the recent Supreme Court decision on vaccine mandates. And also, I have started a new channel on Telegram, and that is a Teach Me type situation, Teach Me True History. And for those of you who are on Telegram who would like to be a part of that, please let me know. Cal, how would you describe Teach Me to the people listening?
Teach Me, on Facebook is difficult. It seems to be easier on Telegram, on your constitutional fraud and rebel madman sites channel. And now with the new one, it's working great too. I'm starting to learn Telegram. But I would encourage anyone to go to that. There's a good Telegram. Look for Constitutional Fraud, Rebel Madman, or what's the name of the new one?
Teach Me True History. And there's the music, folks. Thank you for tuning in this week. We appreciate you. Best of luck. Talk to you soon.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven. Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
0517 for you. We talk about decentralization and that.